Welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet, presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also, hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, special guest, OTG writer Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Corey. Me and Corey have been friends for a long time, but this weekend we're enemies. Face off in our friendly fantasy football league. Big matchup this weekend, Corey.
Yeah, it is. You know, I wish you nothing but the worst this week. So that's how that's going to go.
Luckily for me, Corey has some big time injuries, so I'm feeling pretty confident. But on to basketball. It's been an interesting start to the season. You know, one thing that's probably stuck out to a lot of us is the Eastern Conference. A lot of these teams we thought were going to be successful early on, they really haven't been successful. We'll start with your team, Corey, the Pacers. What's wrong with the Pacers? You know, this is a team we had probably top four in the East, and they're all over the place.
Well, if we recall the preview series that we did for OTG, I had the Pacers being a two seed and winning 55 games. So that was probably the wrongest I could have been on a prediction. They just don't – they're not cohesive. And I watched almost every game. And again, last night they lost to the Dallas Mavericks in Dallas. And Dallas is one of those teams where, like, you know, they're scrappy and they have surprised some teams this year. But you got to beat teams like that, especially on a road trip where you already where you beat the Clippers early, you lost to the Warriors. Last night was a game that the Pacers really needed to capitalize on. And then you look at the box score and, you know, Monte Ellis has 0 points on 0 for 5 shooting. Jeff Teague has a handful of points. Thad Young had a handful of points. It's just like the high-scoring offense they were going for hasn't been high offense at all. And they just look like a mess on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, some of it's chemistry? I think some of the players don't really know their role. And do you think the personalities are a good match? I mean, like, I feel like Jeff Teague and Thaddeus Young are kind of laid-back guys. And Paul George is the only, like, real true leader type of player on that team. Do you think they need someone else to help him lead that team, some more emotional leader? Or it's more so chemistry and roles?
I think, to be honest, I think Paul George still isn't doing enough. You know, he scored 22 last night, but as a leader on the floor, like, there's still at times where, like, you know, for example, I think about when LeBron was down in Miami. There was several times you saw LeBron, like, yelling at Mario Chalmers or, like, yelling at his teammates. And not that I, you know, am encouraging you to yell at your teammates and, you know, on the floor, but there's got to be fire from your leader. Your leader has to show that he cares more than you do to a degree, I feel like.
And I feel at least your emotional leader, I think, at least has to. It doesn't necessarily have to be your best player, but in this case, right. I think it wouldn't make sense to be Paul George.
Right, because I don't think this team has an emotional leader. I look at the team, I don't see an emotional leader on this team. And I think Paul George needs to understand that and be a leader, you know, an emotional leader, and then your leader on the court as well is what they really lack. And for me, though, it's mostly chemistry. And I've been tweeting it almost every night. Monte Ellis has got to go. Or he's got to go on the bench because he can't play against anyone straight up on defense, as we saw against the Golden State Warriors. And offensively, I've never seen a player fall off so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely had his decline. Like, yeah, when he first came to Indiana, he was looking pretty good scorer, but they've been trying to move him for the last few seasons. We might touch on that a little bit later. Another team we'll talk about that had high hopes early on was the Celtics. I mean, the Celtics were missing Al Horford for a chunk of games, but they also just weren't playing well. Their defense wasn't up to standards, I don't think, and their rebounding was an issue. So do you think the Celtics' problem was more Al Horford or just things in general and they're going to bounce back?
I'm actually not worried about the Celtics at all, surprisingly enough. There's four teams in the Eastern Conference who have winning road records, and it's the Celtics. They actually have a better road record than home record. And you don't normally see that. You know, they're 500 at home and they're 8-5 on the road.
Yeah, no, that's a big thing. When you can win on the road, you know, you can fix your things at home and you kind of can build off of that. But when you can get wins on the road, especially against some good teams, it makes a difference.
Right. And, you know, they haven't had their starting five on the floor for very much at all this season. You know, Al Horford went down to concussion. Jay Crowder had a banged up ankle. And now Isaiah Thomas has missed two games in a row with a pulled groin. And, you know, they lost last night to the Raptors, but it was a close game throughout. And I feel like if they had Isaiah, that wouldn't have been they might have been able to squeeze that win out at home. So for me, it's just them getting healthy. And yeah.
That makes sense. You know, they the Al Horford thing, a lot of people are giving him a hard time for missing so many games with a concussion, but obviously it's a serious issue. So I think he has a big impact, and the longer he's with the team, I think a lot of people, myself included sometimes, is you assume that these players will just come in and fit in right away and things will just click like that, but it does take time. So, but
Horford missed one game because his child was born. And he had just gotten back from the concussion. And I've never seen an uproar on Twitter about how pissed off fans were that he missed the game due to the birth of his child. It was insanity.
Yeah, they were definitely on something else over there. But another team in the East, we're kind of talking about all the teams. 3 through 8 are separated by two games. So all these teams can kind of in the hunt. Another team that probably started the season really high, now they've cooled down. That's the Chicago Bulls. What do you think about the Bulls?
I mean, they've been a surprise even still. I think when you look at the bottom, you know, 8 through 5 of the Eastern Conference right now in seeding, you know, you look at the Knicks, Bulls, and Bucks, and those were all teams that we had question marks about even being able to make the playoffs. And you got teams like the Hawks, Pacers, you know, outside of the hunt. And, yeah. You know, the Bulls' three-point shooting, no one thought they were going to be a very good shooting team. And Dwayne Wade has already made more threes than he made last year, and with only a couple months into the season. And Jimmy Butler, salute to him. Every year he has gotten better and better, and again, he just looks like he's on another level.
Yeah, that's one thing I love about Butler. He always adds to his game, and he's constantly getting better. Me and Harris talked about this early in the year. He was playing like the second best player in the Eastern Conference. He still might be.
As of right now, he's better than Paul George. Small forward position, hands down.
Yeah, Jimmy, he's really consistent. I think George, though, he's obviously been a little banged up this year. I think he'll probably get back into rhythm, but last season he started the season really hot, right?
Yeah, he had, I believe, out of the first, like, 25 games, he had 20 or 21 games with 20-plus points.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think part of it's Paul George's injury, new teammates, consistency. I think he'll get back to it, though. You mentioned the Knicks. The Knicks are starting to look pretty good. They're getting some consistency. Winning games, even getting some wins on the road. Do you think this Knick team look better or worse than you originally had thought?
I'm going to say about the same. You know, I thought they were going to be a 6-7 seed in the East, and they're a 5 seed. I'm a bit surprised on how much Joakim Noah looks aged. He's not the defensive stopper or rim protector we saw in his Chicago days. Derrick Rose has been worth the trade in my book. He still has a little bit of explosion left in him. Melo's been mellow. I think Brandon Jennings has been a nice point guard off the bench, and Porzingis has evolved his game as well. And he actually might be the best player on this team through and through.
Yeah, no, I think he may be the best player on this team. Melo probably might be a little bit better offensively, but I think Porzingis does a good job impacting the game even with his shots off. He's had some games this past week with like 5 blocks, 10-plus rebounds. So, I mean, going forward, I've been saying this for a while, it's all about Porzingis. But you mentioned Joakim Noah. I know it's a player that you've liked a lot throughout his career, and he's kind of really dropped off. You think it's mostly age, or is it just not really fitting as much in the NBA with his lack of shooting and, you know, all the small ball?
I mean, he's never been able to shoot, even when he had success. So I got to go that it's just the age. You know, he's in his 30s. His best days, I think, are clearly behind him. But I think, you know, the only good thing about Noah is he still has that fire. Like, even the last couple of times they played with the Kings, you know, he's gone at DeMarcus Cousins and pretty much has tested Cousins', you know, toughness, which is – I mean, I'd still like that about Noah. Even if he can't start, you know, and play 30 to 40 minutes, if he came off the bench with them and played, you know, 25, 20, and gave them a solid effort, he's still worth something to them. But he's definitely not a starter anymore in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, that contract's looking a little bit rough. I think he'll probably be at least decent for the next 2 years, but the 2 years after that, that's going to be a problem. But nothing much else in the East. The Hawks have been really bad, though. They started really hot, and they got a lot of love in our power rankings last week, and now they dropped to 12-12.
Yeah, that's been they're on that brink where you hear rumors that they're not going to tank, and then you hear rumors that they're going to have a fire sale and Millsap will be moved.
Yeah, Millsap's a free agent at the end of the year, so it would make sense to try to get a little something for him. I don't think that they're going to make a deep run even if they made the playoffs. So I don't know. And they do have the young players signed. They have Bazemore and Schroeder signed. I mean, they do have Dwight. I don't think you'd be able to move him, but Millsap would definitely, or Cephalosha might provide some teams with some nice vets.
I find it laughable to a degree that, you know, Dwight Howard signed with the Hawks and they looked really good, and now they might tank, and then Howard just needs another year off his career to a team that's not winning anything, which would be very ironic.
Well, talking about that, you know, it's starting to get to the point, teams are starting to make decisions, you know, are we going to make the playoffs? Are we not going to make the playoffs? And we've started to hear trade rumors. Obviously, this is really early, but it's always still fun to talk about. December 15th, teams can start trading players that they signed the offseason. I'm going to go through some guys that I've heard in trade rumors, and you tell me if you think they'll be traded, and well, the percentage you think that they'll be traded, and what team you think they'd be traded to. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. First up, Andrew Bogut.
He's going to get moved. He will be moved. I'm going to say probably 80% chance right now, because I know Mark Cuban is very stubborn. He's already said that they're not going to tank, even though they're a bottom team in the West.
Yeah, they've got the worst record in the NBA, the second to worst record. So,
And I look at teams that could use the rim protector, and I don't know why, but to me, like a team like the Hornets, if they really wanted a defensive rim stopper, you know, Cody Zeller I know has played well for them. But I think a guy like Bogut would actually make the Hornets a lot better if they had a defensive stud like in the center.
Yeah, he would give them some consistency. I like I'm with you. I think about 90%. I'm going with probably the Boston Celtics.
I don't know. That's interesting.
I've heard them mentioned a few times, and I feel like he fits what they like to do. Setting good screens is a really underrated thing, and they have some really good catch and shoot players. And I think he'd work well in Brad Stevens' offense, and his passing from the top of the key, you know, his defensive ability, and he can rebound. So I think he would fill a lot of needs for the Celtics. And obviously we said the Mavs aren't really going anywhere. Mario Hezonja.
Yeah, this rumor came out. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't really worked out. You mentioned there's a rumor that recently came out. I think Mark Stein said he heard something about it. So putting him in the D leagues. So I think, especially because he had a lot of potential when he was drafted.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say he does get moved. The report that came out yesterday said that the Magic are looking to find a scorer. You know, they want somebody who can score. So, you know, if they're looking for a scorer, it makes sense they're going to trade away one of those young assets. And I guess Mario would make the most sense.
Yeah, I guess I'll go to the next player on our list, and this is somebody I think I've heard linked to Orlando, and that's Monte Ellis.
Yeah, I was talking about this last night with some. I didn't see that rumor, but I was talking about this on Twitter last night that I thought Monte Ellis would be a nice fit down in Orlando. You know, they'd take a risk, obviously, for the fact that Monte isn't producing offensively. But he's played under Frank Vogel, so he knows Vogel's system. And around those kind of young guys, Monte might be able to bring back some of his Dallas, Milwaukee days and Warrior days where he just took the ball and tried to lead an offense to a win.
Yeah, I mean, if they brought him off the bench and they gave him, like, full reign, you know, like, let him kind of be himself and go out and score. Obviously, like you said, Vogel coached him already, so he knows how bad his defense is. So if you had to put a percentage on it and pick a team, who are you going for, Monte Ellis and Hezonja?
For Hezonja, it's hard. I don't know where Hezonja fits in at the shooting guard, small forward position that he plays. Maybe a team like the Kings, if they want to get a guard in there, maybe.
I think any young team might –
a team that's rebuilding, or trying to restart something. Maybe Miami, if they want to take a risk on another shooting guard, because they've had a ton of injuries. The Sixers, maybe.
Yeah.
For Monte, I know that the Pacers really want to make a trade with Rudy Gay for the Kings. I know they've tried to package Monte Ellis into the deal, but I don't think the Kings have any interest. But on the flip side, Monte Ellis to Orlando, I personally think a Monte Ellis for Jeff Green deal would be beneficial for both sides. For some reason, I feel Jeff Green would be a great fit at the two on the Indiana Pacers. Between his athleticism and, I feel like he would just blend in well, because he's not a guy who needs the ball in his hands, and he might be able to play better if he's surrounded by a cast that he trusts more.
I would think if they did that, I'd probably move Paul George back to the two and him Green at the three. I think George is probably more capable of guarding twos in this league. But I think Green kind of would make sense with the Pacers a bit, just because he doesn't really need the ball. The only thing with Green is, like, he never produces as much as you hope he would. You know, like, every time he used to get traded, everybody's like, oh, you know, like, this is a great fit. Like, this is opportunity. Like, when he went to Memphis, everyone was kind of excited about it. And then when the Clippers got him, everyone was excited about it, and nothing really came out of it. But would you think possible Hezonja maybe going to the Pacers and Ellis going to the Magic as part of a trade? Maybe not straight up, but because it's hard to say what the asking price is for Hezonja. He was a first-round pick, a top 10 pick a year ago.
Wow. I suppose it is possible. I wouldn't be a fan of it, only because he hasn't proven much. So
like, yeah, he's not ready yet to really impact. I think he needs a lot of work still. But, you know, drafting him, you kind of knew he was going to be a raw player. So it's kind of right. The Magic situation with him the Magic's front office has been kind of weird with a lot of stuff. Save that for another day, though.
The issue with me is, like you said, he is young. Like, I think he's only 21. I know that he's shooting like 30% this season, which scares me, because that's an issue with Monte Ellis, the fact that he can't shoot. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how well he solves that problem for the Pacers. But he's definitely a player that somebody will take a risk on.
Yeah, I mean, especially at his age, you know, there was a lot of potential there. So, but
and didn't he say he's the best player? Didn't he come out with some comments before the season that he's not afraid to play anybody?
He might have. I'm not sure exactly. I know he did have like a little bit of an edge to him when he was drafted. He threw down some nasty dunks his rookie year too. But on to the Sixers. Now this one I'm going to ask you: who's going to get traded, and what team are they going to trade to? I think now, going to the season, we didn't really know who they would trade, but I think obviously they're keeping Embiid because he's looking like a stud, looking like rookie of the year. But Okafor and Noel, who's more likely to get traded into who?
I'm going to say Noel's more likely to get traded, only because he seems to be the one who's the most he's got the most issue currently with being on the Sixers. You know, he was unhappy when they brought back Embiid, because now there's three centers. And he's been pretty open about that dislike for the three centers. So I'm going to say Noel gets traded. And I also don't think Okafor has very much value.
You know, he's having a rough year, so it's definitely not helping him. And I think, like, you're right. Noel came out and said that he wanted to be traded. I mean, not that he wanted to be traded, but they needed to move one of the three because it just wasn't a good fit. You could even argue they can move two of them, because – Embiid, the way he plays, as soon as his minute restriction's done, that guy's going to be playing most of the minutes. And Okafor really can only play center. Noel, you could probably get away playing a little bit at the four or the five. So, like you said, Okafor doesn't carry much value. The season's not looking well. Noel, he's still – I think defensively there's a lot of potential there. So a team might definitely take a risk on him.
Yeah, and when I look at Noel, there's two teams that I look at in particular that I think he'd be a nice fit on. The Phoenix Suns are one. Because, you know, Tyson Chandler is getting up there in age, and I think Noel would be a nice young piece around Bledsoe and Booker, depending on if they keep Brandon Knight. And then from the East, I wouldn't mind seeing him go to Boston. I know Boston has had interest in him and Okafor. And then the Milwaukee Bucks. I know they've been playing
Henson. That's an interesting one.
I know they've been playing Henson more, and Moreau has been – he's – he just hasn't fit in because he can't play defense. But I think Noel would be a nice rim protector for them, you know, between him and the Greek Freak and Jabari. I think that'd be a nice little trio down in Milwaukee. Yeah.
I mean, he definitely fit the build of the players down there. Long, athletic, like super lanky.
Right. That's what I was figuring. You know, they've been building their team on length with Middletown and all those guys.
Yeah, so I mean, I could see that as a possibility. You talked about Greg Monroe. Do you think he gets moved? You know, it seems like the Bucks have been trying to move him since like December of last year. He just, like you said, he hasn't really fit in. He's shown some value late this past month with his post moves. He's really got back offensively. Defense is kind of an issue, but if he can just put effort in defensively, I think he's a good player, and he probably could help a team in a different role. So percentage in what team?
Percentage, I'm going to say 55%, only because I just don't know how much he's worth or what the asking price would be. So I'm going to say 55%. And then, like, we're talking about teams that need scoring. We know Greg Monroe can score. That's something I'm not concerned about. So maybe Orlando takes a flyer on him, and then he comes off the bench down in Orlando.
Yeah, but I mean, they
hasn't been very effective scoring-wise.
They'd have to move a big, though, because they got a full case down there. I mean, the only reason I'd be thinking that they're not going to be able to trade him is because they've been trying to trade him for almost a year now, and they haven't been able to move him unless the price changes or he continues to play at this level, because I think the last few weeks he's really shown more. So if he can kind of get his value up a little bit, that might be able to move him. But if not, I probably have it under 50%.
Yeah, I just don't see a team that needs a center that can't play defense.
Exactly, I mean, centers nowadays just aren't quite as valuable as they once were with all the teams spreading the ball out. And if you're a center and you can't shoot a three now, it's kind of making an impact too. But Celtics, we've kind of touched on them a little bit. You know, there's been rumors Ainge is trying to make a big trade. Do you think the Celtics finally pull the trigger and make a big trade this year before the deadline, or just still roll with what they have?
Well, I'm actually writing an article for OTG about the Celtics and whether or not they're going to make a trade. So this is something I've been thinking about heavily. If they do make a trade, obviously they're going to trade for a big, and I think it would either be Noel, maybe Cousins, because they do want to get a big in there. I just don't see a trade happening. I just don't see them risking trading Bradley or Crowder or any of the young guys for a center or something when this next offseason you can possibly have Gordon Hayward, Blake Griffin. There's several high market players available this offseason that the Celtics will be better
better equipped to get.
Yeah, better equipped to get.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the thing would be the Clippers definitely probably won't trade Blake because they know this is their last hurrah if they don't win. So they're going all out. If the Jazz were to struggle and not do well, they could maybe move Hayward. If they were nervous, they might lose him and they would get some good value. But like you said, there's just the possibility of a big-time player getting traded. It would have to be something would have to happen, or a team would be do really bad or like continue to decline. I mean, the Cousins rumor has been out there for years now, almost, it seems like. So, I don't know. I feel like they're not going to move Cousins. I've been hoping that they would move him for a while, but I don't think they do. So, I think the only way – do you think – I heard this rumor a few days ago. Do you think it's even possible that the Pacers would listen to offers for Paul George?
I personally don't. Let me give you one little stat. When they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals 4 years ago now, the Pacers started 10-11 on the season. They ended up being a 3 seed and going to the Eastern Conference Finals and losing in Game 7 to the Miami Heat. So a slow start is something the Pacers are used to already in the past. How they manage from this point on and if there is a change, I think determines if that even becomes a realistic rumor about Paul George being traded.
So, I mean, if the Pacers were to go like 10 or 15 under 500, do you think it'd be possible? Or?
I think it would be possible because I don't think he has an extension signed yet, and his contract would be – he'd be a free agent at the end of next season.
Yeah.
So, I think it's possible this team falls apart.
Do you think they move any of the players they traded for this year? I know I'm asking a lot of Pacer questions, but if you guys didn't know, Corey's a big Pacer fan, so – Possibly like Thaddeus Young or Jeff Teague even getting moved just because they haven't liked what they've seen so far, or too soon?
I don't think they're going to move Jeff Teague. I mean, I would love to see, cause they, I know that George Hill hasn't gotten re-signed yet by the Jazz. I would love them not to sign him and to bring back George Hill. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah, George Hill has been on fire. He's looked like on some other – he's never played like that in Indiana, but do you miss Paul George Hill right now?
I highly miss George Hill. And I don't miss George Hill, the point guard. I miss George Hill, the spot-up shooter and defensive stopper, George Hill, which is what I think I took for granted when he was with Indy, is the defensive grit that he played with.
Yeah, he played a good D, and like you said, he could shoot the ball. He had some really good games from three, and he kind of helped spread that floor for Paul George a little bit. Jeff Teague's three-point shot isn't quite as consistent.
I think if you flipped out Monte Ellis and George Hill, this team is not 11-12 right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, but that's a big difference in players. Yeah, so, but that wraps it up for trades. Obviously, this is all speculation. I don't know if any trades are going to happen soon, but rumor has it that there should be more trades this year than the previous years, just because a lot of teams aren't happy with what they've seen so far. But like I said, all speculation. One more non-on-court related issue. Matt Barnes is going to be arrested for a misdemeanor for attacking somebody in the club. What are your thoughts on this?
How ironic. Matt Barnes rushes to his ex-wife's house because he's concerned about Derek Fisher being there. Meanwhile, Matt Barnes is assaulting women in a club. Allegedly. I have to say allegedly because he hasn't been proven guilty yet, apparently. So he allegedly assaulting women, even though if you've seen the video, it's pretty clear.
Corey, say that again. Thing came in kind of choppy.
No. The entire thing?
Yeah, just the whole Matt Barnes thing.
All right. It's ironic that Matt Barnes, the guy who went to his ex-wife's house because he was fearful of Derek Fisher being over, is now being arrested on alleged charges of assaulting women in a club. I find that to be so funny on the turn of events. Even though there's a video out there, it looks pretty clear that it's Matt Barnes. And the bad thing is for the King fans is you had your star center alongside him for that event.
I question the move of signing Matt Barnes this offseason when we did the preview. Like, some of the personalities in that team, even Aaron Aflalo had some issues last year, and then you bring in Matt Barnes, who obviously has been in trouble all the time, and he had that thing with Derek Fisher's, and you surround him around DeMarcus Cousins, somebody who needs good veteran leadership, somebody to show him how to, you know, hold his emotions in and focus on the court and be the best teammate he could possibly be. But instead they bring in Matt Barnes and things like this happen. Like you said, Cousins was with Barnes at this event, so it is not a good look. And things for the Kings just constantly look bad. And I feel bad kind of for their fans just because, like, they have nothing to look forward to. Like, until they make a move with their front office or ownership, it just seems like things are going to be bad in Sacramento.
And I think it's also funny when you look at the Kings and what Rudy Gay said earlier this season, how it's basketball hell. It just really is. It just feels like everything that could possibly go wrong for the Kings goes wrong every year. And this is just another instance. And I know just another thing about Matt Barnes. The Philly game they had last week, they got postponed because the ceiling was leaking or whatever. He put a snap story up, several snap stories of him getting drunk on Hennessy with DeMarcus Cousins. Also, just not a good look if you're DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, you don't want to be associated with Matt Barnes. Just his attitude, his behavior. It's not a good look. And, I mean, even the Kings, like you said, nothing goes right. Last night, Cousins Smith, the layup, that probably would have gave the Kings the lead late in the game against the Knicks, and they just blew it. So, sorry, Kings fans. But that wraps it up for today. Great show, Corey. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, and on to the next one.
Thanks for having me on, Nick. Been a pleasure.